Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Strange Dominions. I'm your host, Octavian Graves. For my longtime listeners, I'm sure you're wondering why there are now ads on the podcast, and the reason for that is because we have moved. We are now on Spreaker, which allows us to put ads on all of our podcast episodes, and that is really helpful to me so that way I can actually put money into the show and make it exactly how it should be and how I want it to be. Tonight we have a very, very interesting episode for you. We are speaking with Jason from Paranormal Patio. He came on my show directly after I was on his show, and we talk on all things from the paranormal, the conscious, the subconscious, the weird, the unexplained, and everything in between. If you've seen something strange or weird, such as a cryptid, spirit, UFO, or anything in between, send me an email at strangedominionspodcast@gmail.com. That is strangedominionspodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the shows in other ways and get ad-free content, you can always become a patron. Patrons start at $4 a month. You get a lot of bonus material, merchandise, and the opportunity to be on the show. And with that, let's get into the interview. All right, so we are here with Jason Andrews of Paranormal Patio. How are you doing, Jason?
I'm doing really good, man. I'm doing really good. How are you?
I'm doing really, really good, and I'm very excited for tonight's talk. I'm very excited that I was on your show, which I just did a little bit ago, and it went great, and I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll start off with a pretty standard question. You've been into this for a while now, correct?
Yeah. As far as paranormal, probably most of my life, and podcasting, my show has been going for almost 3 years.
Awesome. And 3 months, but I'm sure I'll be right behind you. So when it comes to the paranormal, where did that start for you? What was like your initiation into the paranormal world?
I always say that I'm one of the founding principal members of the Ghostbusters generation. And I say that because I've never known the world without Ghostbusters. And during my formative years, like it was a pretty big deal. A lot of people forget how popular Ghostbusters were, the toys and the cartoon and the movies and everything. And it was definitely a big part of my life. For whatever reason, I just gravitated towards it. And that really started it. And when you were on my show, you had said something and I meant to address it, but I think the conversation just kept going. But like you were talking about your grandmother being a part of why you're so into the paranormal. And I had no one to talk about weirdo stuff with except for my grandmother. And she didn't like to talk so much about ghosts or monsters or, you know, that type of thing. But she would always talk to me about UFOs. And so that was like just one of the things that reinforced it early on. And she'd let me say whatever crazy thing, you know, that I had cooked up in my tiny head. And then, you know, it just kind of grew and grew and grew. And then eventually, you know, I started to meet people as an adult who were into this type of thing. So it's been, you know, having that new way to breathe is very good for a person. So
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I have a feeling that grandmothers are a conduit for the paranormal or just weird stuff in general, because it always seems like everyone who's into it, their grandmother got them into it in some fashion or was like right there when stuff was going on. I don't know, like granny magic. Grandmothers have a very strong connection to all of this, I'm convinced.
Yeah, you know, the matriarchs of the family are often those that carry on the folklore as well, you know, so I think that's a big part of it for sure.
Absolutely. My grandmother used to tell me just, and as I said on your show, she would like make up ghost stories just to tell me, just to get me into that frame of mind. She was always about making sure that I could see the broader picture of existence and kind of see the stuff that I couldn't see with my own eyes, if that makes sense, and still kind of make it believable and show the reality of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like that about grandmas.
So what made you decide to start a podcast about it?
Yeah, so, you know, I've always been into the paranormal stuff, and my interest wasn't always at peak. You know, it ebbed and flowed. And I would say that right now is probably the longest continuous stretch, and it's definitely the deepest waters I've ever been in. So periods of my life would be more or less into it, but I always had some interest in it for sure. And I happened to have been in a low period where I wasn't really into it. I was kind of just going through life day to day and real world things, you know. And I had watched a series of documentaries on Amazon Prime. The Small Town Monsters, for whatever reason, had most of their library on Prime for like a month or something. And so I had seen some of them already, but there were a lot I hadn't seen. And so I blew through those, and I was like, man, I've seen them all now, and now I don't know what I want to watch. And I had kept seeing Hellier on there, and I'd look at it for a minute. And I mean, this is one of those really bad, cheesy, cheap Amazon Prime documentaries, and it has hell in it, so it's probably some super Christian based weirdo thing, and I don't have any interest in watching this. But when I had exhausted all of my other options, I was like, I'll give it a try, and you know, maybe 5 minutes, if it's no good, I'll turn it off, I'll go to bed. The thing was, is I didn't sleep that night because I stayed up and I binge watched all of season one and a couple of episodes of season two. And I was hooked, man. I was hooked by Hellier. So the further I got into season two, they introduce Lonnie Scott, the hypnotist. And I see on the screen that says Mattoon, Illinois. And I was like, that's really weird. That's only like 45 minutes from my house. Like, I wonder if this guy lives in Mattoon. So I get on Facebook and I look him up, and sure enough, like, there he is. I'm like, wow. All right. This is weird. So I sent him a message. I was like, hey, I just watched you on Hellier. You know, I thought it was really awesome. Whatever it was, it was small talk. And he replied back, and it was just a really brief conversation. So weeks go by, maybe months. And well, it couldn't have been that long. It had to have just been weeks. He makes a post and he's looking for someone to do some graphic design work for t-shirts for his store, because he also is a podcaster. And I was like, man, yeah, I'll do it. No problem. And so I did. And we spent a lot of time talking podcast stuff, a lot of time talking weirdo stuff, and definitely a lot of time talking, you know, shirt designs, things like that. But one day he makes another post that says, this is right at the beginning of the pandemic. He says, if you have any sort of aspirations creatively, it looks like now is going to be a really good time to pursue those. And I thought to myself, I think I'd like to get back into podcasting. Before I did this show, Paranormal Patio, my friends and I did another show. It was really stupid and it didn't go anywhere, but it was fun. We had a lot of fun. And before that, I had actually worked as a DJ at a radio station for a couple of years, so I had that kind of background. Another friend and I did an internet radio show I think we did three whole episodes. They were awful, but it was fun. And so I thought, man, I'd like to do a paranormal podcast. And I asked my friend John, I was like, hey, would you be up for coming over, you know, Friday night, and let's record some conversation and see if we can turn it into something. He's like, yeah, I'll come over. And we did. And I think John and I did, you know, maybe four or five episodes together. And then life got in the way. John had to back out. And I'm left with, like, here I am. I have this show that's already kind of established now. I mean, it wasn't huge by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, we had a lot of downloads and listens. And I was like, I want to keep it going. So then I changed the format of the show to what it is now most of the time, which is me bringing on a guest and talking with them. And that's where we are.
And I'm right there with you with the Hellier fascination and the, you know, Hellier kind of bringing in all these very strange synchronicities to spawn a creative event in one's life. Because that's kind of how I started. But so you've been around for 3 years, and I'm very curious about what the podcasting, like doing a podcast, looked like 3 years ago compared to what it looks like now and what the landscape was like back then.
Well, I feel like the landscape's fairly consistently been as it was. A lot of shows have started and a lot of shows have stopped in 3 years, some of them the same. And I think really, yeah, it's pretty much the same. The way that my podcast has changed is we started off using like PS3 headsets to record in my actual patio, which is why the show is called Paranormal Patio. So if it was cold or raining, like, we couldn't do anything. And now, you know, I have, like, you know, a pretty decent setup going, and I have my own studio. It's nothing spectacular, but it's a private space where I can talk about whatever I want. I don't have to worry about cars going by or whatever. And I think the biggest change, at least for my show, has just been that, like, just keep doing it. And, you know, you make improvements, you know, and you keep going. But the whole community, I don't really think it's changed in 3 years. I think you'd have to go back farther than that.
That's definitely fair. And it's interesting because when I started the show, I don't live alone. I live with roommates, and it's not even my house. I live with my girlfriend who owns the house, but I don't have, like, my own room or anything. And so we have a patio, and she spent, like, an entire summer fixing it up and making it look really nice. And so my co-host and I were out there one day, and we were trying to figure out where we could do the podcast. And I was like, well, why don't we just do it out here? And I was like, okay, sounds good. And the first episode I did out here, or on the patio, it was good, but I had to go inside because it was so windy and there were so many cars going past that it was just not conducive to, like, a proper interview. So that didn't last very long. So I definitely feel that pain.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. So the house that this started at doesn't even exist anymore. We sold it, and it's been torn down in lieu of building like apartments. But it was within, I would say, 200 yards of train tracks. And so we would often have to stop and wait for the trains to go through in the middle of the night and then start back up. And, you know, it's embarrassing to have to deal with issues like that when you're trying to make some sort of a professional podcast, you know, and you have guests on and you're like, oh, hold on a minute, there's a train coming, we'll have to wait, just give me 3 minutes here. You know, things that come up trying to record a podcast, not only, like, outside, but outside in a town or, you know, a city or whatever, there's so much you can't control. And I don't know, I like to think it gave me a little bit of impromptu-ness to be able to shift and cover my ass.
Yeah, I mean, it really helps with that. I mean, the episode that I put out last night, I was listening to it when I was editing it, and I was getting really frustrated because I kept hearing the jingle of a cat's collar, and I'm, like, looking around the room, like, okay, I hear the collar, but it's, I don't see a cat. It's in the podcast. It's in the audio of me talking, and there was no way to like cut it out. And so the background issues that come up when you're trying to be as professional as possible and talking to someone and not wasting their time is a very, like, it's very frustrating. And it can, if you know how to adapt and maneuver around it, it's a very helpful tool. Sometimes it just can't be helped, though.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. Because even in my new studio, if it rains really hard, it definitely picks up. And actually, the next episode that will be coming out, we had to deal with that issue.
Yeah. When we're recording at my co-host's basement, you can hear all kinds of stuff because his basement, like, the walls are paper thin. Like, I don't even think it has windows. I think it has, like, tarp as windows. so you can hear a lot. But aside from podcasting, where does your paranormal journey begin as far as, like, have you had any experiences with it, like, personally?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had a lot, actually. And a weird thing that I noticed about my experiences, especially UFO experiences, and I've since verified this with other people, is that you don't forget them necessarily, but they don't usually take up much thought, like, in your daily life. Like, I've had these experiences, and whenever I'm talking about things that are related, I'm like, oh yeah, chomping at the bit, like, I gotta tell this. But, you know, when I wake up tomorrow, and, you know, I go to work, or, you know, I go out to eat or whatever, like, I'm not thinking about it. And it's weird. It's always been weird to me that's a thing. But it's pretty common for people who have had especially multiple paranormal experiences. So I've always found that interesting. But yeah, I've had a lot. The whole gamut, almost. Like, almost everything that's happened. Yeah.
Well, if you want to tell some of the most, like, you know, pertinent, or the most, whichever ones you find to be the most interesting, or just all of them, I'm here for it.
All right, yeah. So I'll go sort of chronologically, and it'll be a spot fest. I'll just kind of highlight some of them. But the first one that I remember was, I was 16 years old, and I'd went out to visit my aunt and uncle, who lived across a driveway from his two sisters that lived in their old family home. And I went out to visit, and it was dusk, probably. They lived in the middle of nowhere, which everyone that lives where I live lives in the middle of nowhere, but this is, like, really in the middle of nowhere. And I pull into the driveway, and they have this big, huge driveway. I park my car, and I get out, and this little dog runs up at me. I've never seen this dog before. Did not recognize the dog. They don't have a dog. None of them out there have the dog. I'm like, okay, what's up with this dog? And so it starts, like, running figure eights, like, between my legs and jumping up, but it never touches me. And I get in, like, close to the door, and it runs off. And, you know, I knock the door, and, you know, they open it, and I'm like, when did you guys get this crazy dog? And they're like, what are you talking about, crazy dog? And I said, this dog just ran figure eights between my legs as I was walking up here, and it's, like, all up over me. The door ran off. And, like, well, what did it look like? And I described it, and I don't remember now what the dog looked like, which is kind of weird. But the would be the uncle's younger sister starts crying, and I'm like, what's wrong? And she's like, we had a dog just like that, that would do that exact same thing and run figure eights in between your legs when you were walking. And it got hit by a car 3 years ago. And I had only known these sisters for maybe a year at this point. I had no idea, you know, they had this dog. And yeah, it died there in front of that house. And so I think, I'm not for sure, but I think I interacted with a ghost dog that night. And I think that's the first one that I remember. Of being, like, a little weird thing that happened. So, sticking with the animal motif, a year later or so, I was at my girlfriend's house, and it was an incredibly weird and strange and haunted house, for sure. But one of the experiences I had was, I was using the bathroom, and I'm standing there at the toilet, right? And from the corner of my right eye, it looks like a piece of paper like falling to the floor. Like, you know, paper falls from significant enough height, it kind of rocks back and forth as it goes down. That's what I saw out of the corner of my eye. And I turned and I looked, and there's this little white kitten. And it's just sitting there where the paper landed. And I'm like looking at this kitten, and I'm like, where did this kitten come from? How did it get in here with the door closed? And there's a million questions going through my head. And it runs into this little gap. It's about 3 inches between vanity and the wall of this bathroom. And it's like the corner of the room. It runs in there, and I'm like, well, like, that's a dumb place to hide. Can't get out. I'm going to see it. So I go over there, and there's nothing there. So I come out of the bathroom, and I have this dumbfounded look on my face like I'm going crazy. And I ask, like, what's the story with this cat? Where did this cat come from, and where did it go? And no one knew what the hell I was talking about. So, yeah, I've had a ghost dog and a ghost cat. The other big ghost experience in that house was my girlfriend and I were watching TV in her bedroom. And we were laying on her bed, and a commercial came on. So we had turned and faced each other. My back was towards the TV and the door, her back towards the wall. And she sat up really quick, and she looked over at her door, and she said, I'm sorry, I thought my brother was coming in. She had this younger brother. And I look, and there's no one there. The door's closed. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, no, it's at the foot of the bed. And I turned the bed, and I don't see anything. But as soon as I recognize that there's nothing there, it's like, have you ever had someone, like, if you're laying down, like, unfold a sheet and like toss it up and straighten it out and let it fall on top of you? Have you ever had that happen?
Yes.
Okay, I have. So it's like that, but it's static electricity, and then it slowly drags across my body from right to left. So I'm laying on my back now at this point, slides across me. It disappears, and I look at her, and she has the same look on her face that I feel like I have on my face. And I said, all I said was, did you just feel that? And she proceeded to tell me exactly what I had just felt, because she had just felt it too. So it totally corroborated with each other, right, the experience. But I never described to her what I had experienced until after she had described to me what she had experienced. That house was very strange, very, very strange. Lots of weird stuff in the house, but those are the earlier ghost experiences that I had. Moving forward.
Can I just say one thing real quick?
Yeah.
I think ghost animal encounters are probably like the best kind to hope to have. Like, they're the easiest ones to understand, and they're the most, like, you know, as long as it's not some vicious ghost dog that's chasing you out of a room, I think those are probably the most positive and enjoyable kind of ghost encounters one can have. They're the ones I always wanted.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about me that a lot of people give me a hard time for is I hate dogs, man. I am not a dog person. I don't belong in their world, and they don't belong in mine. And I've accepted that. I'm not, you know, I'm not an animal abuser or anything like that, but I just do not like dogs. I don't want to be around them. I don't want them to be around me. So I have no desire to encounter a ghost dog, vicious or friendly.
That's fair, man. That's fair. We all got our, you know, our trepidations.
Yeah. So,
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, the first UFO sighting that I had, I remember it was the 3rd of July, 2009. It's the only one I remember the exact date for off the top of my head, just because I remember the circumstances and why I was where I was. And I was driving between two towns here locally, County Highway, and it's just dark, like just past dusk. It's officially dark. Like on my journey, probably it transitioned. All of a sudden, it's actually dark. And on the north side of the road, I would say probably 600, 700 yards back away from the road, there is a tree line that butts up against somebody's property, which is mostly pasture. And from the top of the trees in this tree line, going up at about a 45 degree angle, there is a yellow light that moves out approximately 75 feet. Then it blinks out. And then another 75 feet out, it's a red light. And then another 75 feet out, it's a white light, and then it's gone, and it never comes back. So that was the first UFO that I saw. It was fast and confusing because I was also driving, and also it's around the 4th of July, so I'm like, is this just some crazy firework I've never, you know, heard of or seen before in my life? I mean, I live in the Midwest. I know fireworks pretty well. It's kind of what we do. You know, but it was something I had never seen. And of course, whenever I told people, I was, you know, oh, you saw a firework and, you know, all this stuff, which I was afraid of. And that's why that one doesn't usually get brought up. The second UFO that I saw, however, was much more unexplainable. It was 3 years ago, I believe. It was dark. I was on my way to work, and just outside of town, coming into town, I see this red light above the road, probably half a mile away. This thing is massive. Like, it almost looks like the sun, like a sunset. It's huge. And I'm dead set on this thing, looking right at it. And I drive past my turn off for work because I want to see this thing closer. And the closer I get to it, it starts moving across the road. Instead of hovering above the road, it moves across the road. And by the time I get to it, it's like it was never even there. Like, I could not see it. It was totally gone. And I don't remember seeing it leave my like field of vision. Just suddenly it was gone. And I actually got on, like, the town that I work in has a Facebook group. It's like, they call it the Insider. It's where everybody gets on and gossips about everything. But I doubled back, went back to work, sat in the parking lot. I got on there on my phone and I'm like, man, I just saw a UFO across Main Street. Like, did anybody else see this? And I described what it was that I saw. I might not have even used the words UFO. Like, did anybody see this giant red light crossing Main Street? And no one replied whatsoever. No one made fun of me. No one called me out, but no one saw it. And there were cars coming both directions the whole time. So that was really, really weird. Just this big, giant red light. The next big thing is actually several things, and it was back in August. If people listen to my show, they might have heard me talk about these, and probably all of them, actually, I would say. But there's this place that's really close to me. It's a cemetery. It's sort of become a focus area for my research just because of how weird it is. I'm not a ghost hunter. Ghosts are my least favorite of the paranormal topics to research and investigate. But the cemetery is known for having a Bigfoot in the area that is referenced in the only documentation I can find online about the cemetery as the She-Ape. And there are several stories of people encountering free-floating balls of light in the cemetery. Also, typical ghost activity. So a friend turned me on to this place that I lived 20 minutes from and I didn't even know existed. And we decided to go out there and just see what was going on. And we got out there in the late evening. There was still some sunlight, and we did some things, and we waited for it to get dark. we heard these big crashes coming from the woods. So the cemetery is about maybe a mile away from the river, and there's just forest in between. It's like a ravine, and it goes down through the forest into the river. We hear these big crashes, and they are massive. It's almost like a tree falling, but not quite. And the friend that I'm with had a Bigfoot encounter, and he turned white as a sheet. His eyes were enormous, and I could tell like he was stressing a bit because of his past with these noises, and he knows what comes after them sometimes. And so we're standing there just waiting for more to happen. And then we hear this heavy breathing coming from another direction, coming from the west at the tree line. And we didn't see anything there, but we could hear this deep breathing. So he's really freaking out. And I'll be honest, I was a little bit freaked out because we couldn't see it, but we could hear it. And I'm like, let's just try and settle our minds a little bit and chill out. And, we're in the cemetery. It has some Civil War graves. Why don't we play a Civil War song on my phone, right? And see if there's any response to it. And little did I know what I was getting myself into here, because we play this song and we wait. And we see what looks like somebody with a flashlight down by the road going towards my car. And I said, man, Keith, like the song is still playing. I'm like, Keith, there's somebody going towards my car. So we walk down that way. And this light looks like a cheap, like dollar flashlight, like that old incandescent yellow light. And it's just moving past the tree line going towards my car. And we get within 50 feet of my car. And it's gone, and there's no one around. We're shining our flashlights around. There's no one on this road, and this cemetery is isolated. There's not a house for miles, no other cars. I don't think it was a person. So the song is still playing, and we go back to where we were on the far end of the cemetery, and we look up, and we're like looking at the sky. It's a really clear night, really pretty night. And there's this white light up in the sky going from south to north pretty quickly. And I said, Keith, I've got to look at my flight control app and see if there's an airplane. I have to see what this is because that's what I do. And he said, okay, I'll keep watching it. So I pull it up. The closest airplane to us was about 45 minutes away, and it was flying from north to southeast. And this light was going from south to north, almost due north. So it wasn't a plane. And as I'm making that connection and relaying that information to Keith, he says, oh, it just flashed. Oh, it's gone. This is like less than 30 seconds that this all happens. So in one fell swoop there, we had giant crashes in the woods. We had a free floating ball of light. We had a UFO encounter. And when I revisited the cemetery in January, we had three really eerie EVPs recorded. So this little cemetery in the middle of nowhere has become a part of my research.
You got to take me there sometime. Like if I ever come down there, I would love to go and investigate that with you or by myself, something, because those are the kind of areas that I'm always looking for, is the multifaceted ones that have all these different things that happen either around the same time or exactly on cue with each other. And yeah, so that's fascinating. I really enjoyed that entire sequence of events.
I enjoy it too, man. And being there while it was happening was so wild, so wild. And when we went back in January, I took a friend of mine who's really into Bigfoot, and he likes the Bigfoot shows and documentaries and things, but he's not into other paranormal stuff really at all. He's a pretty religious guy, and not to say that you can't be religious and also be into weird things, because you definitely can. Most people here, that is not the case. So we're very conservative in my part of Illinois, very traditional and very Republican. And when I say we, I mean everyone but me, I think. And some of my friends, of course, but the state of the state here is so crazy. Illinois is such a dichotomous state, because when you're out by Chicago, it's one thing, and then the rest of the state is another thing. And people don't recognize that because the voting, right, is really basically just whatever Chicago says, because there's so many more people there than there are for the rest of the state. When you look at it population-wise, it's really wild to look at Illinois that way. But yeah, super conservative. And we go out to the cemetery because of the Bigfoot stuff. And that was kind of what drew me there in the first place. And the last EVP that we caught was actually a little girl saying my name. And that one really got me, because it turned into, like, I don't know, a 4-day ordeal. When I got home and started to review the audio recorder and found that, I was instantly paranoid, because I'm sitting out here in my studio. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, I'm all alone. But I look out my studio door. There's, you know, like the classic rectangular arch window in my door. And I look across the road to my neighbor's garage, and I see this 4-foot tall, like grayscale human. It looks like a kid. Just walk past my neighbor's garage. And this is the middle of the night. And I'm like, that's my brain telling me that I need to go to bed, because it's trying to make sense of this. Because I was really deep into this EVP. And I'm like, I'm just going to shut everything down. I'm going to lock up. I'm going to go inside.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So I do, and nothing happens. The next night, I come out to the studio, and I want to clean the audio up. I want to isolate it, because I've decided at this point I'm going to have to put it out in some way. And I'm sitting out here messing with it, and I start to get that eerie feeling again. And I'm like, man, I'm not going to be able to get anything done when I'm in that mindset. So shutting it down, I'm going to go inside. So as I'm locking my studio door, I hear a whistle. And a lot of people wouldn't think too much about that, but one of the other recordings that we got at that cemetery that night in January was someone whistling that wasn't one of us that were there. And this whistle came from far off, but loud, like not close and quiet, but far off and loud. And I just kind of raised my head up. I looked around. There's no one outside. Like I said, I live in a really small village. I have a few neighbors that are close by, but no one is out past 10 o'clock. Like, I'm the only one that's out. And so I'm looking around. There's no one there. I walk from my studio to my garage, and I open the back door to the garage, and I hear the whistle again, this time coming from the opposite direction. And I thought, that's weird. I'm going to whistle back. So I whistled back, and I waited, and it whistled back at me again. And this went on for about 15 minutes until I was like, I'm just kind of done. I'm not going to stand here all night and whistle. I'm going to go inside and I'm going to go to bed. So I just said good night out loud, respectfully. And I went inside, and I thought that was going to be the end of it. So the next day comes, and I'm wondering, is something going to happen? Am I going to see something? Am I going to hear something? What's going to happen? Nothing happens. But it was either the next night or the night after, I heard the whistling again. And we whistled with each other 3 times each. And that has been the end.
That is both incredibly creepy and also extremely fascinating, because one of the things that I've been really interested in is when you start interacting voluntarily with these phenomena, how does it affect the nature of them?
Yeah.
That, so,
it's in order of cybernetics, right?
Right.
It's observing something changes it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
it observes that change, and then you observe the observation of the change, and so on and so on and so on. And by the time you get to the end of it, it's something completely different. So yeah, that's a really good question to ask.
And so I'm trying to think of how to tackle that entire thing, because there's so many questions I want to ask you about, like, have you looked into the history of that cemetery? If there is anything that has been noted in old newspapers or in urban legends and things like that, like, is it a notorious area for at least one phenomena? Like, I know you said the she ape. Is that the extent of it, or is it kind of like a well-known area in your town of weird stuff happening?
A few people know about it because of the lights. I don't want to say the name of this place because
that's fine. Sure, I have areas that I don't say the name of. So. Yeah.
So it would be, if the place were called Springwood, which it's not, people will sometimes talk about the Springwood lights, and that's what they mean. And they've heard someone, or they've seen themselves, these balls of light. But I had not heard of that. I've lived in this area my entire life. I had not heard about that until August of last year, when my friend Keith is like, in the middle of this long conversation we're having about various historical and paranormal things, he says, and by the way, the Springwood lights are real. And I'm like, the what? And so he explains it to me, you know. So I looked it up, because that's what I would do. And that's probably what you would do. First thing I did, I found a report online from a ghost hunting group that visited the area and went to the cemetery in the daylight, and they just typed up a little thing about what equipment they had, what they were able to discern from their interaction there. And they mentioned that they would like to go back and revisit it in the dark because it had been daylight. It also mentions a local ghost hunting group that I'm not affiliated with and I don't have anything to do with. I'm sure I could reach out to them to get some more information on the cemetery, maybe some more stories beyond what I was able to find. And I have not tried to dig too deep yet into the historical society, just because there's a very big generational gap between our, like, preservationists here and me. Like, they are way older, way more conservative, and I have a hard time thinking that will be a fun conversation to have on my end. So I've kind of stayed clear of that, but eventually I'm going to have to break down and dig into it more. So no, there's not a lot of information about it, but the weirdest thing I found about it is the oldest listed grave there. The person that was buried died on my birthday, like back in the 1800s.
Well, that's fascinating.
That's
a very, very, I mean, it's not it's not uncommon, but it's not usual either. That's a very nice little, like, key into that area. Like, oh, okay, it's like calling to me. At least that's how I interpret these kind of things.
Yeah, it was, but I found that out way after the fact, you know?
Yeah.
So it's weird. It was just a weird little thing.
Let me ask you about something you said a little bit earlier. What is it about ghosts that turn you off?
There's so much conjecture about spirits of the dead and how every cemetery is filled with the spirits of the dead. And I just have a really hard time believing that, because if I think about it from the perspective of the spirit of a dead person, why in the world would you want to hang out where you're buried, where people might come and visit you once or twice a year? Like, if I were to die right now, mid conversation, and I became a ghost, I am damn sure not hanging around here. Like, I got things I got to find out. I got places to see. You know what I mean? I'm not going to hang around here, and I'm not going to hang around wherever they stick me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So no, I have a hard time with that.
I totally identify with that. I absolutely agree with that. And that's something that I've always had a hard time with. And that's what turned me off to the ghost thing. You know, I was really into it when I was younger, when I was like 12 to 15. And then I had my ghost experience. Well, I had my experience with a disembodied voice. I'll say that. Yeah. I don't know if it was a ghost. And I remember I told that story on your show just now. And what I didn't mention was after I had listened to that audio, I was overcome with this weird feeling of guilt. Like, here's this young girl who died and probably hasn't talked to anybody in 80 years, and I'm the first person that she reaches out to, and I didn't, like, stay after I heard that and try and talk to her. But after that, my interest in ghosts, as far as them being the souls of dead people, because I got very into different philosophical and theoretical ideas, and that idea became less and less plausible. And so it just, and also the issue that I take with ghost hunting, and there are other areas of the paranormal that do this, but it's a very big deal in ghost hunting, is it seems to be used by people as a vehicle to push religious views. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%.
So when they say that everything is demons, that yes. drives me nuts.
Yes. Because you're preaching to the choir.
Because, and it annoyed me because there are other entities that are of a spiritual or incorporeal nature that aren't dead people and demons, and those never get talked about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And it's interesting because as I've been getting into ceremonial magic and, you know, ritual magic that deals with demons, but most people just call them spirits, from all the magicians that I've talked to and listened to, they seem, from like experience, to have a very different idea of the nature of what we'll call chthonic entities. I know most people would call them demonic, but I call them chthonic because they're of the earth. That is like their domain. And a lot of people report when they, you know, bring one into physical manifestation, into a triangle, let's say, they don't really want to be here. It's like uncomfortable for them. Stephen Skinner, who's a very well-known author and occultist, has likened it to if someone, you know, brought you down to the bottom of a pool and made you like be down there for like an hour. Well, you physically couldn't do it, but it would also be like more and more uncomfortable for you. So there are traits that get assigned to demons that people who work with demons on a regular basis haven't seen. And so I find that very, very interesting.
Yeah, and I do want to clarify too that I don't think that every ghost sighting is the spirit of a person who has passed away. I do, however, think that those encounters with the spirits of the dead do actually take place. I just do not think that every ghost encounter is with the same.
And that's how I feel about it too.
Yeah. So from a philosophical standpoint, you know, with my personal belief system, I can't say that the spirits of the dead do not ever visit the world of the living. And you can trace back stories of that, you know, all the way, you know, there's tales of the underworld in every ancient civilization, right? The land of the dead. And you can look at that, and there's always the stories of people wanting to bring someone back or someone coming back from there. And it's a popular trope in a lot of mythology.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And there's a reason for that, and I think it's because it does happen. You know, I just don't think it happens to every person who sees a ghost in a cemetery. I think there's a lot of energy people put into these places that are haunted places, whether it be a cemetery or it be an old hospital or an old mental asylum. You know what I'm talking about. You know that cliche.
Of course.
And there's a lot of that energy that's put into that. And what happens when you keep throwing energy into something? It's going to manifest into something. And if you keep on keeping on, eventually, someone's going to encounter that thing that didn't exist before people start talking about it.
and I have a very, very similar view. And I kind of said very similar things up until recently, because I've been playing around with this idea of, if you look back through ancient cultures, pre-Middle Ages, the old pagan cultures, both in the Middle East, in the north, in Scandinavia, in Greece, the underworld was not a designated place for certain kind of people. It was where everybody went. It was just the place to go when you died. And yep. When we moved away from polytheism into what was then a very Christian and Judeo-Christian and monotheistic worldview, a lot of records were burned. A lot of old folklore and old stories didn't get passed on. They didn't get written down. So if you take the animist view and say that we are constantly surrounded by spirits of all nature's types and species, but we have no recorded sightings or stories or theories about what they were, their names, their nature, their origin, things like that, you have all these nameless spirits just kind of wandering around. And I've been curious about the idea of, we have the idea of people being possessed. But if a spirit decides to make residence in a place, and the weird paranormal phenomena that happens where it didn't happen before, that could just be a subset or a side effect of a nameless, unknown intelligence taking root in an area. I don't know where I'm going with that. That's just a new idea that I've been kind of thinking about. That also, and the idea of places have intelligence and agency, and for some reason, the weird paranormal stuff that people experience that is just a manifestation of its own consciousness, like a location's consciousness.
Yeah, that's an interesting take on it. I mean, I have a hard time accepting the idea of spirits of everything just wandering around. And I prefer to look at it from the point of view of, like, it's a collective energy that's covering everything. I don't like to think of independent, free-thinking spirits per se. I think that a lot of what we deal with comes from a source energy. And a lot of people take that as God or as some sort of personification of the idea of God. But I don't think it's that. I think it's just what makes up things. And there's a difference in vibrational state between tables and chairs and walls than there is this non-manifested energy. And then, for whatever reason that we don't know yet and we can't identify yet, and I'm working on this theory personally, there are certain things that will happen to certain people in certain places that will manifest part of that energy into whatever it is that that person is capable of recognizing and processing and getting something out of, whatever that something might be. So that's how I look at it.
And that's very plausible. It's absolutely a plausible theory, and it's very possible, and I like that theory. One thing that I absolutely wanted to ask you about, because the way I heard about you, the reason we, all this started was because I heard you on Conspiranormal a couple weeks ago, and you were talking about the Order of the Golden Circle and cave systems and kind of like a parallel to Hellier type subjects. And I'm very curious about that.
Yeah, so the Knights of the Golden Circle.
Yes, the Knights. My apologies.
You've heard the story, and I don't remember exactly what I said on Conspiranormal. As far as how deep into the topic I went, I know it was something that Adam had wanted to talk about, and I think maybe he thought that I had more on it than what I did. And I didn't mislead him or anything. I think he just, that was one of the things he thought, being more conspiracy minded. I came across it for the first time 2 years ago, roughly. I have been working on a documentary, and I've told the story a million times. And if you want me to cover the documentary information with your show, I will. It's not something that I really would like to do, but I would recommend anyone to look me up, and you'll find me telling it on several different shows.
Just give me the links to it, and I can put it in the description. You know, if
sure.
You don't, yeah, that's fine.
So during the research phase of this, I'm contacted by someone on my website who had heard an early episode of my show where I had talked about this big synchronicity storm that sent me down this research and documentary path that I'm on. And he says, "Hey, I'm living in this area of Kentucky where you're talking about. I've lived here my whole life. When I was a kid, I was taken to these stone steps by my grandpa and his friend. And these steps were natural steps. They went down this ravine and went to a wall. And this wall had carvings and pictographs on it." And that was really all it said. And it had his name. And I looked all over for this guy. I couldn't find him for whatever reason. A few months later, I'm on Facebook. And I'm like, man, I'm going to look again for this guy because I really want to talk to him now, because this is, you know, very in line with what I'm looking for. And so for whatever reason, yeah, I pull the name back up and I search on Facebook and I find him. So I reach out to him. I'm like, hey, this is a long shot. I've been looking for someone by this name for a long time. Did you send me this message? And I pasted the message. And he said, yeah, that was me. And so we talked for about an hour and a half, 2 hours on Facebook Messenger. Excuse me. And the last thing he says was, be careful when you're poking around down here. And I jokingly said, oh, yeah, because of the snakes. And he said, no. Well, yes, but also I found this lapel pin a few months ago, and I posted on Facebook asking if anyone knew anything about it because I didn't recognize it and it's really old. And a few days later, these guys showed up at my house and they told me not to talk about what I didn't understand and explained that it was a lapel pin for members of Knights of the Golden Circle. And they're still around and they are terrifying, and just be careful. This is the first time I'd ever heard of the Knights of the Golden Circle. I'm not a historian. I'm not a history buff. It's not really my thing outside of the history of what I'm researching is pertinent to what I'm researching. So I start digging into the Knights of the Golden Circle a little bit, and I learn that it's this just before the Civil War. There's this group that's like an offshoot of the Copperheads that wants to create a slave nation from like St. Louis, Missouri, south all the way into South America. There are several notable people that are members of this organization, and they would go around and they'd collect all this gold and they'd bury these stashes across the entire south of the United States. And when the Civil War broke out and the Confederacy lost, everybody assumed the Knights of the Golden Circle dissipated. But what this guy is telling me is that they're still around. So, weird enough, but a friend of mine was recently engaged. Well, I say recently, like last year. And they were in Shawnee Forest in southern Illinois whenever the guy proposed to her. And she put pictures up, because there were a bunch of people there and they took pictures, and she tagged the location as Knights of the Golden Circle, Shawnee Forest. And I was like, what in the hell? I love the Shawnee Forest. It's my favorite place in the world. I go there all the time. And I've never, well, one, I didn't know what the Knights of the Golden Circle was until, you know, however long ago. And two, I'd never heard of this place being in the Shawnee Forest. So I looked that up. And it turns out it's this old Knights of the Golden Circle meeting place that they used pre-Civil War, and I decided, well, I'm going to go there. So in September, when I went down to Nashville for the Strange Realities Conference, I'm going to stop in there, and I'm going to look at it and see what's up. And it's such a weird little place. It's this, like, almost like an amphitheater. It's like a three-quarters of it is a wall, rock wall, really tall, probably 15 feet. In front of it is this stone arch, like a natural archway. And you, like, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'4". I had to duck down to go through it. And then you go in and it's all opened up. And then there's like another little side path. And yeah, it's a really secret place. And if you go back to that time, this was a very secret place. This wasn't a national park. You know, this was the woods. And there's no one living there. There's no roads. There's no trails like there are now. This was a secret place, and definitely believe people could have been meeting there, you know, and it was really cool. So I spent a lot of time talking with the guys from Pennyroyal in Somerset, Kentucky. And for whatever reason, one night, Nathan Isaac and I are talking, and he brings up Knights of the Golden Circle and Jesse James. And Jesse James is kind of from the area that I've been focusing on in Kentucky. And there's a lot of stories about him. And yeah, he's an alleged member of the Knights of the Golden Circle. And I dug into that a little bit. And then Nathan at the same time is digging into that. And it ends up becoming part of a live stream and then part of one of the episodes of season two. So it's weird how, like, there's this research that kind of permeates between researchers in different ways. Like, he didn't come to it because of my experiences with it. He came to it on his own experiences with it. And it's different. And then we were able to kind of, you know, exchange a few things. And
what is it about Kentucky that is so weird and elusive and just so out there? Because everything, and especially since, you know, Hellier was a big deal, but since then, Kentucky has just continuously been a part of these different paranormal phenomena and different paranormal research, and it's so numerous and so quick, like, all of a sudden, everything's talking about Kentucky, and I'm just so curious about what it is about this state that is just permeating all this weird stuff.
Man, I wish I knew. There's a million theories, right? But no one knows the geology, the geography, the isolation, the people. I don't know, man. It's a good place to go hide. It's a good place to go do shady shit that you don't want anybody to know about. And I, you know, obviously people have been doing that for centuries. But Kentucky's a weird place, man, for sure. I do not know. I do not know why. It is the way it is, but by God, that's what it is. It is just the weirdest, the absolute weirdest.
The Knights of the Golden Circle, I know that it was more of a political group, but in the research that you've done, have you noticed any kind of, you know, esoteric leanings or activity that is surrounding them during that time? I mean, I know that was a long time ago. That was pre-Civil War that they started, and I know that there were esoteric groups and esoteric activities in the States during that time. So I'm just curious if you've come across any of that in your research.
I have. And it hasn't been concrete, unfortunately. Like, there are some theories that there was a lot of occult practice going on. There are some theories that there was absolutely none. But I'm of the mindset that you don't make plans to take over half of an established country without having some semblance of forethought into the magical side of it and the sorcery behind it. You look at a lot of things, and I don't want to get political, you look at a lot of things in politics, modern and historical, and there are significant implications that magic has been used either for or against those in power for, you know, centuries.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a very strange, like, lineage between we'll just say extreme political ideology and the occult. There have been multiple instances of those two things going hand in hand. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if they had some dealings with whatever was the occult back then.
I think the majority of the people that were wrapped up in this movement, no, absolutely not. You're talking about people from the South, and I don't want to get stereotypical, but these weren't professors and doctors that were in on this. This was farmers. These were blue-collared guys. This wasn't something in their wheelhouse. Magic? No way. You know what I mean? Like, the only thing I need the moon and the sun for is to know what season it is so I can plant these crops. And these were... I don't want to be condescending. Again, I have a bad habit of feeling like I'm being an asshole.
No, I don't think so.
These aren't the type of people that are doing ceremonial magic.
Catch my drift. But are in an area where granny magic is very much a thing, and certain folk traditions, while they may not have been called magical at the time, have tendrils of magical activity, even if it doesn't look the way we would imagine it would. You see what I'm saying?
100%.
So in that respect, I'm curious about that. And the task you gave me of looking at their meeting places in certain states and then cross-referencing it with a map of paranormal, specifically cryptid and UFO activity.
Yes.
I'm very excited to dig into that.
I'm excited for you to dig into it too, because I think we're going to uncover something.
Absolutely. And I think this is all about crossing paths and then kind of getting on the same path and strengthening that lineage, that research. So I'm very excited about it. There is, you know, lodges and occult orders. I have a mixed opinion about it because it does have a long, long history. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you know about, like, the Golden Dawn, like the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn that was started by Mathers in, you know, the late 1800s.
I couldn't sit down and teach about it, but I'm moderately conversational.
So one of the issues with that entire thing was that a lot of what they were practicing was kind of a hodgepodge of very badly sourced information.
But it was a hodgepodge of poorly sourced information delivered in a way that no one was the wiser.
Yes, absolutely. And so they had the reputation and they had the aura of a real esoteric order. I don't know how I feel about lodge magic. I have an interest in it, and I always kind of dreamed about joining a magical order or a lodge. The only ones that are around me are the William Blake Lodge, which is a Thelemic lodge, and I've gone to a couple of their meetups, and they're very cool people. I wouldn't really consider myself to be a Thelemite. I find Crowley to be an interesting figure, and when I was younger, I definitely gravitated towards his aura and his activities and his attitude, because as a teenager, that's really cool. That's really rebellious and dangerous, and you want to be like that. And then the more you learn, don't research your heroes, because you realize that not only was he not a very good person, but as a magician, he never finished. There were a lot of rituals that he never finished, that he never completed. And so he built up the image of him being this grandmaster magician, but in reality, he wasn't really much of that. He had the image, and that has propelled magic forward, I think. I think that will always be, he will always be the poster child for magic and the occult, and that's a good thing because it gets people into it. But I'm very wary of people who say that he was, A, a prophet, and B, this master magician. When you read into what he was doing and what he tried to do but really couldn't, the image quickly falls apart.
I will largely agree with you, and I will say in the realm of magical orders and lodges that I don't feel they're necessary. And I don't feel that you need to be in a group to perform magic. I don't feel that you need to perform ceremonies to perform magic. I don't feel that you need to do rituals to perform magic. I don't feel that this semblance of order makes any sense when what you're talking about is grabbing a piece of disorder and materializing it. I have a very hard time when someone says, well, the only real magic is this magic, and the only real magic is that magic, and all that other magic is complete bullshit. It's all bullshit. I feel the same way about religions. They are there as crutches for those who need them to walk further down the road. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you need that in your life, I'm happy that you have it. It is not necessary to walk with a crutch if you don't need a crutch. And the thing with magic being different than the literal crutch and literally walking is that you don't have to do anything. You don't have to live a magical life to live, but you do have to live a magical life to live a magical life. And that's kind of weird and corny to say, but
no, but you're right. You're absolutely right. And I think that there are some people who, in order for them to really comprehend something, that kind of order and organization and structure is important and is helpful to them. I don't think it's necessary at all.
It exists as a way to trick your subconscious into confusion. These elaborate rituals and elaborate ceremonies, to where your subconscious doesn't know what the hell is going on here. And it puts you in a state where you're able to just, you know, access that energy and that interaction. But you can do that without. You don't need all of the fancy bells and whistles. It's just a matter of getting yourself to that point. And some people do need the help.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But those people that really need the help probably aren't going to do anything anyway, I feel like.
And I can totally jive with that. But talking about magic, do you feel like, have you ever practiced? Have you ever done any kind of magical work?
Yes.
Can you talk about it, or is that more of a private thing?
I like to keep it mostly private.
Okay.
I will say that what I borrow from, if I borrow anything, is I do a lot of sigil work, and I have a pretty successful rate with sigil work.
I enjoy sigils. I've never done them myself, but I see their merit, and sigils have been a thing for a very long, long time, and they have a lot of weight to them.
Yes.
My curiosity with it is, when I started getting into magic, chaos magic was absolutely very instrumental in getting me in the right frame of mind. And when I was going through the books like Peter Carroll and Phil Hine, and I credit Condensed Chaos for making magic approachable to me and, like, you know, giving me a way of not just brushing the whole thing off and actually, like, digging in and finding what works.
It gives you a basis of terminology, right? It gives you a basis of understanding what it is that you're doing.
Absolutely. And One thing that I am a huge, huge Lovecraft fan. His writings, I know a lot of people, they're kind of a joke because of the way he wrote, but I actually am very attracted to the way he wrote, like the language he used and the overemphasis on description and adjectives and making up new words to describe something that doesn't exist. I am very into that. And I've always been attracted to the Kenneth Grant Typhonian esoteric order of Dagon, like the kind of the idea that these fictional writings could manifest in magical energy. I've always found that idea very fascinating, and I would love if I was able to like actually work through the Simonomicon or the Necronomicon and see like if there is anything there.
There will be there what you're capable of experiencing. There in everything is what you're capable of experiencing. There are so many people who have believed that that is a real thing, that now the egregore exists, and it's just a matter of finding a way to make contact with it. And that's the same for every deity and every angel and every demon and everything that has had all of this energy put into it over the years. It exists in a way, and it's just a matter of making that contact if that's what you really want to do. And also, I'm also huge into the Lovecraft mythos, the Cthulhu mythos. I see the obvious and immediate faults with Lovecraft. Also sort of a shady person, definitely a racist, probably a closeted homophobe. And also, at the same time, I definitely think he was curious about his own sexuality. He was an interesting person. I do like his writing style, despite, you know, being a product of his time as far as racism goes.
Right. And I absolutely agree. Now, going off of the magical stuff, if you're willing to, what are your thoughts on using magic in terms of researching the paranormal? What do you see any validity there? Have you ever experimented that with your experimented with that yourself, or do you not? Where do you fall on the idea that the two are somehow connected, or that you know they can be used to learn more about each other?
I do think there is something there. This is a big topic. I'll try to be brief, I guess, and I'll try to give just little nudges to you. One thing that I take away from the folkloric magic is candle magic. And I do it not because of correspondences with colors and things like that. I think where I am performing some sort of intentional candle magic deal. I wouldn't call it a ritual. I think ritual should be reserved for something that's, has a bit more gravitas. But I think that there are these egregores that have been pumped up over the years with the ideas of the people who have created them. And they observe the rules created in that paradigm, and the rules of candle magic being a way to contact the spirit world, to manifest different things. Those things exist because the other things within that realm exist. So it's useful in that way. And actually, the cemetery that I told you about earlier, when Keith and I went in August, and I don't know if I've told this or not, so you might be getting exclusive here. We did some candle magic in a, this is ridiculous, but I'm going to say it, in a fairy ring that also existed at the cemetery. When we got there, the light was still out, like I mentioned. And at the back of the cemetery is this ring of black fungus. And it's about 6 foot around, almost a perfect circle. And I thought, man, this is just perfect. So, you know, I did a little candle magic thing there. And, you know, we experienced a lot. Would we have experienced that without? I don't know. I didn't do it in January when there was a foot of snow there, and I went back the second time, and we still captured, you know, EVPs. But that could just be because there's also something there that likes to talk to audio recorders. You know, it could just be a coincidence. It's such a weird place. So who knows? But yeah, there are definitely reasons to do tasks that are magically related to the thing that you're trying to accomplish, because those roads have already been built by other people who really, really, really believed that it was true. So, for example, look at the rituals of the Catholic Church and masses, right? Those rituals they do to appease their deity, right? And you know, they for Lent they give up the thing and it makes them, you know, better and all this. That's a real thing to them. That's real. That's their reality. And it's ridiculous to people who don't see it, like myself. Like, to me, that's ridiculous. But to them, that is real. So if you want to approach the Catholic God in some sort of magical ceremony, I recommend doing the things that he says he likes, according to the people who believe the entire story. And you can translate that to any other life.
And that's a very, very real thing. The power of not saying that the thing that they're doing a ritual to is objectively real, but I feel that think about how long Catholicism has existed and how long those rituals and masses and all of that has existed. I don't disqualify the power and length of something as being a generator of activity or of, you know, an entity, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And I think that it's really hard for people who are not religious to see value in the things that the religious people do. And I lump myself into that because while I understand why they do the things they do, for the most part, because I don't feel like I need to do them, I find it all to just be so absurd and ridiculous. And people are willing to die on that hill. They will argue you until you are dead that their way is the way. But it's not just, you know, the traditional religions that do that. It's also magical orders. It's also people who practice specific magical systems. This is the way. Whatever you're doing is wrong, and you shall not reap the benefits of what we will. And there's power in that because they have created power in that, especially the Catholic Church. Look at the amount of power the Catholic Church has, the changes it has made to the world, the secrets that it keeps locked away in the Vatican. And there's no denying there's power in the Catholic Church. Look, yeah, like you said, the longevity and the amount of people that prescribe to it. Although the numbers are down and they continue to drop year after year with almost every popular major religion.
If things like Christianity do like continue to exist, I would hope that it goes into like a Gnostic territory, because in my opinion, I find, you know, and this is kind of goes into what we're talking about, lodges and things like that. Spirituality only becomes confined, I believe, when it gets structured, like the church.
Yes.
Or the synagogue or the mosque or, you know, any of these kinds of organizational spiritual outlets. I don't feel that if the celestial does exist, I just don't feel like it wants to be in behind four walls. I feel like it wants to be venerated in the world it created, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah, it does. I don't believe in an intelligent source of life myself. I don't believe in a personified God myself. And there are multiple reasons that I could sit here and tell you, but they will change every day, so I will spare you of them. But there definitely, whenever there is structure, there is a tiered system of power. And humans love having power. And they will do whatever they can and whatever they have to get that power. If it's not you, it'll be the next guy that will. And if it's not him, the next, and so on and so forth. And whenever people have this power, especially power with such amazing reach as a church, go to any town in America. I think this is George Carlin that said this. Any town in America, the two biggest buildings, a bank and a church. Why? Power, money. And that desire takes anything good and sours it, man. It sours it all.
I couldn't agree more. Now, going back to your experiences with everything that we've talked about, in your mind, do you feel that the things you've experienced are objectively external to you or the people you are around, or do you feel that they come from you, or that they are intimately related to you on like a subconscious level, or a mixture of the both?
If you would have asked me this question 6 months ago, I would have 100% said it's external. It's independent of my consciousness. In the last 6 months, and this is exclusive, no one publicly has heard this, I have been dealing with a lot of mental health problems, depression, anxiety, and I have found that a lot of the things I thought were personality traits and quirks that I had are actually anxiety symptoms. And so I've been coping with this and other more personal problems. The change that I see now is that I'm less sure of everything than I ever have been, because of how like fundamental I thought my personality traits are, and they're not personality traits. You know, I have anxiety issues that I need to learn to deal with better. For a very long time, I have felt that the other people that exist around me are very much like NPCs in a role-playing game. That I walk around and I'm the only one who thinks beyond the day. I am the only one here that has the thoughts that I have, that are even remotely close to the thoughts that I have. These people don't care about any of this stuff, and this is reality. People don't care about reality. And what I'm finding now is that the reason I think that way is because my brain is trying to cope with stress and anxiety in a way that it seems to be rationalizing it for me. And for whatever reason, that's how it's projected to me. So I have been cruising my life along thinking one particular way, and now I know, oops, that's not right. So it'll be really interesting to see where I land on that same question in another 6 months or further out, that, you know, how internal is it? I don't know. But when you can capture tangible evidence, whether that be audio, video, photograph, what have you, of something, does it matter if it's something that came from an external energy source or if it came from your internal consciousness? Because either way, to me, is just as magical and just as fascinating.
The synchronicities that have now popped up just from you answering that question are insane. Because I've been dealing with the same thing, and a little bit longer, I've, you know, since I turned 25, my entire reality has crumbled around me like multiple times at this point. And it has really brought me into the, not the mode I'm thinking of right now, but this sphere of thoughts that kind of complement each other and also conflict with each other, and trying to figure out what it is that I really believe, and, you know, what parts of me are me and what parts of me are mental illness, because it did not become apparent to me until my terrifyingly beautiful psychedelic trip that kicked my ass. It completely tore me apart and brought me into a much more fragile form of myself, but one that has already been through the ringer and kind of has these new things to think about to fortify, in a real sense, my defenses, like mentally and physically. Does that, you know? So, yeah, all of that is very resonatory with me. And I think you and I are on a very, very similar plane on that.
Yeah, it seems so. It seems so.
Well, we're winding down now, and I think it's a perfect place to the end of the night. But go ahead and plug your stuff. Tell everyone where they can find the Paranormal Patio.
Sure. Well, I'd like to start with thanks for, you know, reaching out and making that initial contact, and I'm glad that you did.
It's my pleasure, and it has been very fruitful.
Yeah, I've enjoyed both conversations. So the first thing that I would recommend anyone who wants to get more of my random nonsense words to do would be to look up the episode of my show that you appear on. I can't tell you right now at time of recording when that will be released.
If you want, we can try and coincide it so they come out together, like this episode and yours.
Oh yeah, we can totally do that. I've done that before. So we'll be in contact. But look up that episode. There's a good chance it'll be a link in the description of this episode that you're listening to right now, because I know this episode of this show will be a link in the description for his appearance on my show. So you can find my show at paranormalpatio.com. It has links to everything, show descriptions, where you can buy books from our guests or find them on social media or their blogs or whatever they have. Also, you know, we're on social media ourselves, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and YouTube. The YouTube is not a focus, so when you go there and you don't see a whole lot, it grows whenever I want it to. It's not a focus of mine. I use it as a tool more than an outlet. And our podcast is available everywhere except for Apple. It's a personal decision, and I never get tired of saying it.
It's totally respectable.
Yeah, it's people ask me, why aren't you on Apple? Why aren't you on Apple? It's like I hate the company, and I don't support them in any way. And I know that I could probably more than double my listener base if I were to just list it on Apple, and I refuse because they're a horrible, wretched company, and there's nothing good about them. There's not one redeeming factor.
I couldn't agree with you more. Trust me. Thank you so much, Jason.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you giving me the chance to come on your show, and I'm very excited for where this, you know, collaboration and friendship goes, and everything included in that. So thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure, man.
All right. Well, you have a great night.
You do the same.
And that was my interview with Jason from Paranormal Patio. I really, really enjoyed talking to him, and I'm very excited to have him back on the show. I think we're going to do a lot of work together on his show as well, and I'm just very, very pleased with how that all came out. Jason's a really good guy and an excellent podcaster, so I highly encourage everyone to go check out his show. And ladies and gentlemen, that is it for tonight, but we will be back again next week on our regular time on Monday. All right, have a great night, everybody.